I got together with these two very savvy women to speak about death. We all can benefit by bringing it into conversation. Traditionally, herbalists assisted in birth and death and everything in between. And today, it's no different. And Brigitte Mars and Susan Weed are two of our most brilliant. And they've got a great sense of humor. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Welcome, Brigitte and Susan. As internationally known herbalists, it's no surprise that your life's work goes the way, including end-of-life care. It's a doula, traditionally, that is part of that role, isn't it?
Absolutely. And just like, you know, both of us have been involved in the beginning of life care, it makes sense that as the decades pass, that we will be helping our loved ones make the transition to the other side. And what a joy, you know, and how to advocate for it to be done according to a person's wishes and to do it more environmentally as well.
One of my very first mentors was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, so I started at death. Elizabeth just put death on the map. You know, before Elizabeth, we didn't talk about it at all.
Yes, and it's wonderful that I heard you both speaking about a woman gives birth, and so to say we give death is very appropriate.
Yes, and in honor and respect for death, a woman who's doing a shamanic apprenticeship with me participates in the ceremony of giving death.
In listening to the teleseminar that you both did together on working in this way, it was just so refreshing. And that might seem a strange word to use, but it was completely void of any foreboding or dread. And it was such a celebratory moment, like a birth, not unlike many things today that have passed from the family and community to corporate. There's a wisdom pulling death and its ceremony back home. Are you both experiencing more requests and more conversation about this?
I have completed a program through the Conscious Dying Institute, and I have been teaching in that program as well. And I see that there's people who work in many different modes of life that want to come and be of service to the loved ones in their life, and even people that they don't know often need a bridge, someone who can help begin the dialogue to find out how would you want your body to be cared for, who would you want to sing at your memorial, just getting the dialogue going. And it was very touching. The first client I had, the daughter said to me, I never knew seeing a death doula could be so much fun, because we really just offer an opportunity to respect everyone's wishes so that when the time comes, we can do it with more grace and ease rather than decisions being made for us. And just like if you wanted to have a natural childbirth, you would probably have to do some preparation for that, whether it be drinking herbal teas or doing prenatal yoga. It's the same thing with death. If you don't put some energy into discovering how you would like it to be, it often gets decided for you. And it can also cause a lot of conflict within a family when people aren't in agreement.
Yes. Now, Susan, hearing you say that you started with this, it's such a great level of participation. And it does seem like death has kind of been left out into some kind of a void. So I'm wondering, as you've been able to focus on this with other people, what's an experience you've had with someone where you're really helping them out emotionally and spiritually in order to make a graceful passing?
One of the very first cancer patients that I was asked to help was a six-year-old boy with cancer. And his parents came to me and said, regular treatments are not curing our son. Is there anything that you could possibly offer? And I said, can I speak privately with your son? Will you trust me to talk to your son without either of you present? And they said, yes. And when he and I sat down to talk and I said, how can I help you? He looked me right in the eye and he said, tell my parents it's time for me to die.
And what was that like? Where did it go from there for you?
I was able to tell his parents that. I was able to say, yes, your little boy knows that this is his time. Elizabeth always told us we had an expiration date stamped on our left buttock where we can't see it. And it was his expiration date, and he was so clear.
Yeah. it's very interesting to watch people. You know, what ends up happening is all of our own emotion and fear gets dumped onto the person who's passing, when I think they are definitely in a whole other kind of experience by this point in their lives.
And very often we encourage our loved ones to stay here for us and give them these false hopes, like, come on, we're going camping next summer, when really sometimes the most compassionate thing to do is give them permission to leave and don't stay here for you, because their bodies and spirits might be done with this time on this plane.
Absolutely. And regardless of the type of transition, obviously we're talking right now about passing from this life into the next, it's about letting go of control. And unfortunately, that seems to be something that gets left until we're on our deathbed. How do you work with that with people? How do you bring that up in discussion?
You know, I once said to Elizabeth, I said, Elizabeth, people come in here and they like blame themselves for things that are so clearly out of their control. The woman who wanted cream in her coffee and her husband went out to get it and was killed by a brick falling off a building while he went out to get the cream, and who's, I killed my husband because I wanted cream. I said, and I can give you a dozen other examples. I said, what's going on? And Elizabeth said to me, oh, don't you understand that blame and shame and guilt give us the illusion of control? She says, it's a chaotic universe.
I would say.
Bricks fall off buildings and hit people on the head. You want to feel that if we had only done X, Y, or Z, we could have averted that, that we are somehow in control. And she says, it takes a lot of guts to just be with the chaos.
It does. There's a presence being in the moment. And that falls into the concept of, well, okay, we need to get ready. What does that mean? How can you get ready for something you don't know unless you are in that moment every moment?
You get ready by not being afraid.
Yes.
But you can't just not be afraid. So you have to find, what are those ways for you to not be afraid? One of my students was one of 10 terminal cancer patients who was given psilocybin to see what would happen. We know what happened. All 10 of them said, oh, death, no problem, bring it on.
Right.
And she's the only one of the 10 who survived her diagnosis. And 10 or 11 years later, you know, she said, it's worn off. I'm afraid of death again.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the psilocybin wore off.
Yeah, well,
that would have been a good hit.
Right? Psilocybin's ability to show her that death was just another thing, just another movement, another, oop, here we go. But that had worn off in the cultural concept of, oh my gosh, stave it off, bite your nails, don't go there. Uh-oh, scary, scary.
Yes.
It's creeping back in.
Brigitte, how do you approach that, or how have you seen that?
Well, I do think for some people that have a lot of fear and don't really know if there's anything beyond the material, a psychedelic experience can be beneficial for the one who is leaving, and also for the loved ones who are in a state of grief. Many people find that the psychedelic experience is sort of a practice of surrendering and trusting and seeing that there's so much more than meets the material eye. But I wanted to just add ways that we can be ready, and things that really we should all think about, not wait until we're on our deathbed and complete some of the things we want to do. So things that might get discussed as an end-of-life doula is, what would you like done with your body? You know, and exploring the more ecological properties. There's actually a natural funeral home here in Boulder that's doing all kinds of new techniques, including a burial by water, and then you can use the water for your garden. It could be very helpful for people to think about who they would want to speak at their memorial. Or another thing is looking at, who might we need to forgive or ask forgiveness of? How can we clean up our material comfort zone so we're not leaving so much chaos for our loved ones? And getting our finances in order, if that's possible. And even letting our loved ones know things like where the bank accounts are, or the passwords, or the buried treasure in the yard. Would we want to be viewed at our end of life? Would we want to be dressed in a certain way? And what kind of music would we want played at a memorial? I'm thinking in the terms of the chakras, and indigo is really getting in touch with, well, what do you believe? What are the things that are going to comfort you so that you can make this transition more easily? Violet is really about being ready to surrender to the divine. And we can practice that with things like yoga and breath work and prayer and meditation, as well as the psychedelic experience. Those are some of the things that would help us to feel that we were more complete when it's our time to leave here.
Yes, and certainly it helps the family. If you have more than one child, then you're going to have two different opinions about what all of those things are that are important or how they should be carried out. I don't know if either of you have heard of this. It's called the Five Wishes, I believe, and it is a legally binding agreement, or rather paper, when it's been signed in front of a notary, and it covers those types of things in a very basic way, but it certainly leaves your offspring off the hook. I would imagine that people that come into contact with you are of a similar mind, but perhaps the parent that they're calling you in for may not be. Is that true or is that not?
That's certainly possible, but you focus on where are the similarities and what are the things that you can agree upon. And ultimately, I feel that we want to respect the wishes of the person who is leaving, and that's why they want to use their voice while they still can and realize that if they don't, it can cause a lot of division in the family. And so, you know, no one's there to overly direct. It's more just to see that their true wishes are maintained. And it may even come down to the fact that when someone's really ready to leave, they may not want to be fed. And to force feed them or to have IVs stuck in them or put them on respirators, I mean, that is a huge thing that really divides people. And you better think about those things before you go into a hospital, because then they'll just keep you plugged in as long as possible.
And if you have a directive that says, don't plug me in or don't do this or do this, please tell the people who will be there to care for you where it is. I was in a situation. Her very dear friend slipped on a rug, broke her neck, was hauled into the hospital, operated on, put on a respirator against her wishes, and when I finally got there to visit her, of course she couldn't speak, we had a letter board, and she kept spelling out, pull the plug, and I had to tell her, I could walk over there and pull that plug, but an alarm is going to go off, and I will be thrown out of the hospital, and I will not be allowed back in, and they're going to plug you back in. Where's the directive? And she couldn't remember. You know, I said, you want that plug pulled? You tell me where that directive is. I'll find it, and then they'll pull the plug. It took us 5 days to find it.
That's the kind of thing that ideally you should bring to the hospital with you, because I've heard stories of people say they plug them in until we could find the paper. You know, there's even little books you can get called When I'm Gone, I'm Dead, Now What? Let somebody know where those things are. How nice it is not to leave a big mess for our loved ones. Sometimes there's not a choice. But, you know, I love in Susan's The Wise Woman's Menopause book, she says that when you get to that age of menopause, it's time to make a will if you haven't. And it's also time to start doing the things in your life that maybe you always would have wanted to have done, but you were busy raising children or a career. And I also like the idea, if we all know that we are going to leave this planet, what are some of the things that we want to do before we leave? And things that could be completed, art projects, things we're making, it's such a nice thing to complete them. If not, it's just leaving a lot of junk. Whereas if you complete some of those projects, they could really be a gift to your heirs.
That feels so wonderful, Brigitte. Thank you for that. Now finish your painting, finish your score, finish your novel, finish your dance. Do it for us. Thank you.
So when you are speaking with someone, I would really like to hear, since you both have so much experience, how you did engage initially with an individual and where you saw it go. And perhaps if you've learned a lesson or two along the road about, oh, I really didn't need to do that, or I should have done that, or, you know, something like that, because this is such an individual experience. We're all coming in and we're all going out in a totally unique way, right?
I'll just share something of a dear friend of mine. Her mom has been dying for a really long time. and really wasn't able to walk, was bedridden, was in diapers. And I asked her daughter, did she have a spiritual faith earlier? And she said, yes, she used to be Catholic, but when she was married, they kind of put that aside. And I said, you know, it might really be of comfort to her to have a priest come to the house. And that really did help her to let go. It doesn't matter so much if it's what, you know, the father or the daughter believes in, but if you can figure out something that is going to be an ally for them, that can help their ability to let go and feel that I did what I needed to do. Now I can rest easy.
Yeah. While I was writing down there, my lover of 30 years, Fern, was diagnosed with metastatic cervical cancer about a month after her mother died of Alzheimer's. I was able to be with her in some of the last days of her life. And she had several concerns, but one of the things that I think was most fun was that I was there with my beloved friend, Marie Summerwood, who was also Fern's lover. Fern said to the two of us, you know, I have two vibrators, and I want to give each one of you one of my vibrators. But you have to pay for them by each having an orgasm for me. So Marie and I have worked very closely together and even taught Sacred Sex workshops together. We've never been lovers. And so there was this, like, kind of shyness. And then after we had had our orgasms, which gave us the right to have those vibrators, then we made sure that she had two orgasms. And she died about 36 hours later.
Wow.
Oh, and I thought I did my mom a favor, but it was nothing like that.
Well, Fern and I really, and I continue to believe that orgasms are an untapped healing energy, especially women's orgasms.
I did not see this going this way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely not going into dissing hospitals or a death in a hospital because it's been miraculous for so many people. And the same thing can be said for doing the home death, just like a birth. They can be beautiful in either place. Yet there's times, I imagine, in a hospital where you really do have to know, just like you were talking about earlier, Brigitte, you need to know what your boundaries are. I had to fly back east to see my mom on her deathbed in the hospital, and I got there very early in the morning. No one else was there, and here comes this very perky little nurse. Okay, it's time for your mom's speech therapy. So here's my mother. She'd had a stroke, so she was really not even there anymore. But she had four tubes coming out of her nose and her mouth and everything. And here's someone coming in to give her speech therapy. And I was shocked, you know, but I just said, oh, well, thank you. I don't think we'll be needing that anymore. And she looks at me and says, oh, but she's on my list. You have to pay attention. It's not unlike the rest of our lives. You know, we have to pay attention and not allow ourselves to be pulled rank on, I guess, in some ways.
Or to have something added to the bill that might not really be necessary.
We chose her not to die at home because she was very deeply dehydrated and we really needed that IV, which we weren't going to do at home for her. And soon after I got there, she turned to me and moved her mouth in the shapes of, I want to die. And she's not really able to articulate at that point, mostly due to the chemotherapy. And I repeated, I said, did you just say I want to die? And she nodded her head very vigorously. And I said, okay. I explained to her that her husband, who had predeceased her, was standing at the foot of her bed. And that he was as handsome as she had ever seen him. Perhaps it was the very first time that she had laid eyes on him, and she knew at that moment. And that his heart and his arms were wide open, and that she was to start walking toward him. And that she was to feel herself walking and feel her feet on the ground. And I told her that two of her four sisters, who were her special favorites, were one standing on each side of him, and they too had their arms open and were waiting for her. And that she should walk toward them. And she closed her eyes and began to walk. And not very long thereafter, the nurse came in and I said, oh, what are you here for? And the nurse said, well, I'm here to give your mom antibiotics. I looked at him and I said, my mom doesn't want antibiotics. And I burst into tears.
Mm-hmm.
And this nurse looked at me and said, "You are the loving child." He said, "I cannot tell you how many children come in here and say, more antibiotics, more chemotherapy, more surgery, more radiation." He said, "Thank you for being willing to let go of your mother. Do you know what a blessing that is for her?" And he didn't give her the antibiotics.
Yay.
And she was dead in a few hours.
Now, have either of you had the experience where you're called on to go see someone and it's been difficult for you to let them go? Or are you just always in with whatever that person is doing and saying and wanting?
I haven't experienced a situation in which I have been athwart the flow of it. That doesn't mean I might not be. At one point, I said to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I said, "What's wrong with me?" She said, "Well, a lot, but is there something specific you're asking about?" And I said, "Yes, there is something specific I'm asking about. You know, people come up here in these workshops, and they work out, and they beat the phone book, and they cry, and they scream, and, you know, you have us stationed around the edges of the room, because when they do that, other people are going to start having feelings, too, and so we can take them to a private room and help them there." I said, "But I'm not feeling any of that. You know, person after person comes in here and does that, and I'm not feeling any of it. What's wrong with me?" And she said, "Oh, you've already dealt with those things, but you'll see, somebody will come up with your issue." And sure enough, you know, before the day was out, woman my daughter's age came up, and her mom had died of breast cancer, and Elizabeth wanted her to deal with her anger at her mom, and she kept saying, "I'm not angry at my mom. I love her. I love her. I'm not angry at my mom. I love her. I love her." And my daughter, who was living on the other coast at that time, was writing me letters consisted exclusively of, "I love you, I love you, I love you," and I suddenly realized what she really meant, and I freaked out.
Oh, no.
So we can always get to that point where we think we got it covered, and we don't. But so far around death, that hasn't been. It's been like the first little boy. It's been very clear when that is clear that this is the path that's opening up.
Brigitte?
Well, something that I sometimes say to people that they often find of comfort is to imagine a loved one is going on a cruise. And we're all there on the shore weeping and waving our handkerchiefs. "Oh, this is so much." But like, our loved one gets to go on a cruise, and on the other shore will be loved ones waving and weeping. "Look who's coming."
Oh.
And for me, the surety, or at least my own surety of eternal life, makes me trust that the universe is full of promise and evolutionary adventure, and I look forward to it, and I really don't think we need to fear it so much. So if I can help somebody to have less fear and more anticipation of a great adventure where they perhaps most likely will see their loved ones again, what a great opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. Now, as we're winding up with time here, is there an herbal brew that either of you have that you recommend to either the family or to those that are passing? Is there something that is special for you? Maybe scents or essential oils would be nice. What are you laughing about, Susan?
I just did a class today on magical plants, and we talked about how sensitive human beings are at smell. And I'm sure you've heard of forest bathing, and one of the reasons that forest bathing works is because the natural scents are present in very small dilutions, like the part of 1 per million. And that's the range at which our bodies are designed to make use of scents. An essential oil is like setting off an atomic bomb in your brain, and I would never bring an essential oil into the room of anyone who is dying.
How about lavender water or something like that?
Any natural scent that they like would be certainly be fine, but certainly not an essential oil. So I was just laughing because we had just been talking about that today at the Magical Plants class. What I think can be very helpful to people when they're in a stressful situation is any herb that they feel supports them in a stressful situation. So for some people, if they're drinking nourishing herbal infusions, then nettle infusion, which strengthens the adrenals and helps get us through stressful times. Or if you're feeling particularly anxious about that, that, then motherwort tincture or lemon balm tea, both of which help relieve anxiety. So it's not like a one-size-fits-all, because every death in every family and every situation is completely different. When my lover, Pierre, was diagnosed with the metastatic prostate cancer, what I wanted for him was morphine. And I asked them to give him as much morphine as they could until he was smiling. And they said, well, that's going to destroy his digestive system. I said, I'll take care of that. I gave him herbs to take care of that. And then his wife made a papaya leaf tea from papayas that the two of them had planted. And he stayed alive for another 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know of that
papaya. So it's going to be really different for each person in each situation.
And to add to that wonderful list that Susan gave, I sometimes like hawthorn and homeopathic ignatia, which is a remedy for grief. And I always thought it was curious that when someone dies, everyone gives bouquets of flowers, and a week later you have all these dead flowers and empty vases. What about either a living plant or something that can continue the eternalness and memory of the loved one who's left? Or even sometimes a piece of rose quartz is a nice gift to the person.
Beautiful, Brigitte. That's so wonderful. Oh, a real potted plant, rose quartz. Yes, yes.
Yes, agreed. Well, I loved what you said in the teleseminar when you said, okay, last piece of advice, label your tinctures. I thought, that is what someone's going to have to remind me to do.
Don't die and leave us with all your unlabeled tinctures. Come on. Thank you.
Oh, well, is there anything either of you would like to say in closing?
There's something that Ram Dass said about death. Two things. I'll share those. One, it's perfectly safe. And two, it's like taking off a tight shoe. Okay, a little bit of humor to make light.
One of my very early teachers got me into understanding that a life well lived is a life in which at any moment you can say, today is a good day to die.
Mm-hmm. Bravo. Well, this is great. I just think it's so wonderful to be able to just share about this topic, because it's held in the dark that it is almost foreboding. It's like anything else that you just sort of keep in this little box that you never let any light in on. So,
thank you for inviting us and giving us this opportunity and sharing with us. It's been delightful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Blessings.
Thank you so much, ladies. Brigitte Mars and Susan Weed. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are hopefully wherever you would like, and if not, get in touch. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.